NBA is off and running here in Orlando.
Styles the little jump shot is up. It is good! Scott Styles with his 30th assist for the night, and that's the new NBA record.
With the first pick in the 1992 NBA draft, the Orlando Magic selects Shaquille O'Neal.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to report a trade.
Here's Hardaway. Neal hammer home on Ewing.
Clock is down to 12, and Anderson stole the ball. Hardaway picks it up. Two on one. Penny bounced past the grip. He does it. Nick Anderson stole the ball.
Hello, Magic fans. Hocus Podcast coming to you. 33 Trigger, Brett David Roberts, Chris Chartier is joining me. And we just are coming off another loss to Houston. I pretty much called the final score about roughly in the podcast. I said it'd be about 120 to 105. It was 128 to 106 or something like that. It was a 20-point loss. Houston did both cover the spread, and it went over, as I said it would. It was very unsurprising, all aspects of the game, but there was one dark cloud hanging over the game, and that was Aaron Gordon injured his foot. X-rays were negative, which can or can mean very little. If he strained a tendon, we won't know yet. I think he'll probably have to get out and test his foot out and see how it feels before they do anything. It's not a good thing. No, that's definitely like the worst possible outcome is when the guy you want to see, who I said I was going into the game to watch last episode, if you remember, get injured.
Yeah. I remember you saying that Aaron Gordon was your lock in fantasy last night.
Well, and I said Ibaka too. Ibaka did come through with a good game now.
Ibaka did, yeah.
I had both of them. I stacked them. And Aaron Gordon, I mean, I can't predict injuries. I'm not Zoltar or anything, you know, so that totally screwed us all who had Aaron Gordon, but that's much more serious than a night of fantasy. Like, I'm not worried about losing $10 on a draft site when I'm losing a guy that is basically keeping my interest in Magic basketball alive. He's the one guy that I think has potential to go next level on the Magic, you know, and get better. And I don't see anyone else on the roster that exhibits that outside of maybe Biyombo, who I like to watch too. And if Biyombo gets injured, I mean, I just cursed him. I mean, then I'm going to like take blame for this whole rebuild, and it's all my fault. In fact, I think my article about how bad the Magic needed Porzingis on Orlando Magic Daily sealed us not getting Porzingis. I think I screwed us there too.
Wow. I think the Knicks
read that article and then just said, you know, we're going to take Porzingis just to make this Orlando Magic blogger really mad.
There's a method to their madness up there.
Yeah, Phil Jackson was reading Orlando Magic Daily. He's like, you know what? This guy is on point. We need to steal him from the Magic.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon getting hurt definitely wasn't fun to hear. I was glad Mario got some minutes, because I don't know how many minutes he would have got if that didn't happen. But, of course, I'd rather have Aaron Gordon healthy. In a post-game interview, he said he doesn't believe it's serious, and it's not. The injury didn't take place to the prior foot injury he had his rookie season. Right, that was to his left foot. Right. This one's to his right. So that's some good news. Hearing him say it's not serious. He was in a walking boot, but hopefully he makes a full recovery.
There's an element of injury proneness to Aaron Gordon, but he also seems to bounce back fairly well.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I know about Aaron Gordon, he said it himself, his rookie year, is that he's not going to come back when he's not 100%. If he's slowed and he knows his reaction time is off because of it, he's going to take the time to get all the way healthy, which I respect because, Aaron Gordon has to cover the toughest defensive assignment every night, and if he's a footstep slow on Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, that's a big night for those guys. So yeah. Aaron Gordon needs to make sure he's perfectly healthy, and the Magic need to, too, and I don't think there's any sense of, let's rush him back when the situation is now 14 games below 500. To call this anything but a tank would to be very disingenuous to me, but the Magic aren't just going to say, hey, guys, we're tanking, so we'll continue to masquerade as though this is an effort to make the playoffs, but it's not going to happen.
No, it's definitely not.
And Aaron Gordon's injury only makes it that much harder, you know?
Yeah. last night there was a play, and I'm not sure exactly when it was, and I'm not sure when Aaron Gordon hurt his foot. I don't think there's one play where, you know.
There wasn't. I watched it. It was like, it was inconclusive as to what actually occurred. I don't know.
There was one where James Harden drove in around him, and Aaron Gordon just stopped moving. He stopped. It was odd. It stuck out to me. He kind of gave up on the drive.
Right. I backed it up to the previous play to see if I could see anything happen on the previous play to indicate that that was what led to that, but I didn't see anything there either.
Yeah, it was tough to try to pinpoint where that was, but that play where he just pushed him and it was a lazy foul, Houston got the and one.
Right.
It was just, that was not typical Aaron Gordon defense. Something looked off. The team, I mean, Houston shot 36 free throws and Magic shot 20. There was definitely, Houston was the aggressor. I mean, we took a lot of really bad fouls as well. I mean, as far as overall field goal percentage, it was pretty close, but Houston knocked down 16 threes to our six. So I think free throws and three-pointers were definitely the difference.
Now, one thing that did stand out to me was that Serge Ibaka had a really good game.
Yeah, he was hot.
So I think Serge Ibaka is showcasing himself and playing his way out of Orlando. He wants a team to want him. And yeah. I'm applying that same statement to one Nikola Vucevic, who also came out very aggressive but very selfish. And I saw a lot of the play, even though both of them played good basketball games, it was very, look at me. And that's okay with me right now, really, to be honest with me. If they're looking to improve their stock so that the Magic can get them out of Orlando, that's cool. Because this rebuild has gone nowhere.
I thought that they both took shots that they normally took. I thought Serge knew he had a hot hand, so he took more. Mm-hmm. I don't like when Serge forces it from the three. But he had some nice runners in the lane. Mm-hmm. He had his turnaround fadeaway. He had that working for him last night. But again, I mean, we talked about Vucevic, and you mentioned it was lazy offense by him. And, you know, Vucevic is a talented shooter, but over 82-game season, it's not going to produce a winning record, the shots that he takes. And last night, he made most of them. So, you know, those nights will happen. He's in the NBA. He's a talented shooter. But over 82 games, I'm not buying into that.
No, I don't think he's a starting center on a really good team, you know?
No.
There's a place for him in any rotation because he can score that mid-range, and he'd be a very effective second-unit center a la Greg Monroe in Milwaukee, you know, to come in and get buckets against some of these second-tier centers that can't defend very well. But I don't see the Vucevic having the all-around game that you want from your starting center, and neither does Philip Rossman-Reich, and neither do most of the other Magic writers that I've been in contact with, or even the more knowledgeable fans. There are Vucevic stands out there or whatever. There's a few. I do know of a Magic writer that is high on Vucevic. I'm not going to like call him out by name and then like say he's an idiot because I don't agree with him, because Vucevic certainly can have his nights of looking like a very effective center. But the defensive limitations to me are just not. The center is the most important defensive position on the entire court. You want a strong defensive center. No matter what team you are, you want a guy that can protect the rim and get rebounds. And honestly, Biombo seems to show a lot of that. And that's why I liked sticking with him and developing him, because the investment's already been made. And I don't think you just sell out after a season and say it didn't work, because nothing's worked.
I agree. And, I mean, Vucevic last night, he has gotten better on defense. There was a time he poked the ball away on a pick and roll, and he played it better, but there was still numerous times that he got alley-ooped behind on pick and rolls. I mean, the roll guy is just rolling so hard, and he's just athletically, he's limited so much, and in today's game, it's tough.
I don't remember what DeAndre Jordan did to Vucevic, but he, against the likes of DeAndre Jordan and the guy in Drummond, Andre, I was about to call him DeAndre, I had this pause for a while, Andre Drummond, because I always call him DeAndre Drummond because of DeAndre Jordan, and it's an inane error. I never make it writing, but I make it speaking frequently. Anyway, digression aside, Vucevic doesn't have what it takes physically to body up with those centers, and like really even against a guy like Marc Gasol, he's at a disadvantage. You know, he's really slow. He's not that strong. He's gotten stronger since his rookie year. That's for sure. He's put on a physique and he looks like a basketball player. But ultimately, against these really athletic centers, he can't do anything.
Yeah, he's limited. It's tough. I definitely like Biombo better than Vucevic going forward.
He's younger from too. Defensively, there's upside.
And I'm gonna say this too, offensively, because not that his offensive game is better, but I think what you have to realize, and Magic fans have to realize, is that offensively, Vucevic shoots the ball. He shot the ball 12 times last night. You know. I know I want Aaron Gordon shooting the ball more. You know, I want him shooting it more. You know, if Serge isn't on the team, those 20 shots go somewhere else. Biombo on the floor, he's not going to take 12 shots. That's not his role. But offensively, he's going to play his role a little. It's less, so other people's roles can grow into more.
You're looking at a situation where you have a chance to have a Ben Wallace-type center. That's what I wrote about Biombo when he came into the league. I said, could Biombo be the next Ben Wallace? This was for Bleacher Report back in 2011 when he was a rookie. And it's taken a lot of time for Biombo to get to that. But Ben Wallace, if you recall, had a few seasons where he was in Washington that weren't outstanding either. And in season with the Magic, he only played about half the game. So some of these guys take a little time to develop, but ultimately he's never going to be that guy you go to offensively, and that's okay. Neither was Dikembe Mutombo. You know, and Mutombo is a Hall of Famer, retired jersey kind of guy. Could Biombo be that good? Probably not, but he could be a key defensive cog and starting center for a while, and he's very young. He's gotten a lot better since he was in Charlotte. You know, his offensive game still lingers far behind what you want, but comparative to his rookie season, there's been a strong learning curve there. He's gotten better. He has a little bit of a mid-range shot, believe it or not, when he wants to. He's very hesitant. Yeah. He's very hesitant to take it, and it took a while before you saw Dwayne Dedman get comfortable to take it, but now in San Antonio, he's hitting a mid-range shot. So that's certainly attainable for a center to get a 15-footer that's reliable, to have a couple post moves, a strong drop step, and score 12 points a game and be effective.
Yep. I agree. And Biombo, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he had success in Toronto. But in Charlotte, I mean, he was a rookie and he was learning his spot in the NBA. But also in Charlotte, I think they expected him to do a little bit more offensively while they were still finding their way.
They were really bad, too. They were really bad that year.
When he went to Toronto, that was Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan's team. So when he went there, I mean, and Jonas Valanciunas was, before he got hurt, you know, his role was to come in, set screens, roll hard, be active around the basket, add value without getting plays called for him, you know, and on the defense end. And no wonder he shined, because he wasn't being asked to do too much. And if the Magic try to rely on him to do too much offensively, they're going to be in for disappointment.
I agree with that on most levels, but I think when you get in some of these games where the Magic have been in, where you're down 15 points anyway, the time to work on his offensive game is there. Give him the ball in the post and let him practice some things. And that fits along with the whole tanking effort anyway. You know, you start working on things that might work in the future. And to dump him, if you can get the ball to Biombo on the block, if any center in the NBA can get the ball on the block, that's a very nice position to get the basketball. You take one step hard towards the rim, and you either get your shot blocked, you get fouled, or you dunk. You know, and something happens. So to get Biombo the ball in position is crucial at this point, because he doesn't have a plethora of moves. He's not Vucevic. He's not going to make a dribble, a pump fake, a drop step, and score. He's got to have it simpler than that. So get him the ball where he can score in these games where you're not going to win, and let him develop something. That's the side point to the not go to him too much, you know?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely, like, if we're down and stuff like that, just let him develop and stuff like that. I think a big thing for him is going to be in the summer, because offensively, he just needs a foundation. He needs to be able to catch the ball, He needs to be able to go over a shoulder. And his touch really isn't that great. I think his hands being so big play into it. Mm-hmm. But I think he can turn that around and use that as an advantage. So he just needs a move to go to. And if you can get a move and add a pump fake to it or something and just put the ball on the floor one time. I mean, when he's running off those pick and rolls, he'll catch it from the elbow to the block and he'll...
Yeah, he can cover a lot of room.
Yeah, he'll get vertical and he'll slam it down. I mean, his athleticism is high. So he just needs to figure out what type of foundation he wants. Because I notice sometimes he likes to fade away. I don't think that's his game. I'm not saying he can't hit it, but consistently, right now, no.
No, ultimately he has a really nice drop step. You know, he covers a lot of ground on his first step. But what he's got to do is become friends with the backboard now. He's really got to learn how to work the angles on the backboard and get some of these shots that he's throwing up towards the rim off the glass instead. Because when you're 12 feet away from the basket, there's all kinds of angles you can get on the backboard. It makes it a much easier shot. And because he's not some kind of knockdown Dirk Nowitzki shooter, obviously, it's to his advantage to get really acquainted with the backboard. And that hasn't happened yet. He's going to need some time to develop. But that's been apparent since he was drafted. And like I said, the learning curve is there, so I'm not overly concerned that he can't develop into an effective player that you can get points from. A Tyson Chandler-type level offensively. That's what I would want ultimately from Biombo.
Yeah, that would be awesome to get that.
Now, Mario Hezonja got some minutes last night. He got 15 minutes. He started the third quarter after Aaron Gordon went down with the sore right foot. So there was, unbiasedly, there was bad for Mario Hezonja, definitely. I mean, you see where there's still things in his game that he needs to work on, but there's also good. And he scored 7 points on 6 shots. He hit a three. He was 1 of 2. Now, the other three he took, Ibaka threw it to him late in the corner. He was trapped, and he hoisted it up. I mean, it was shot clock was running down, and hoisted it up. He almost made it too. But he had some bad turnovers, two of them came from him trying to dribble in traffic. Him dribbling in traffic, it's not there yet. He struggles, and I'm not going to say I don't know if it'll ever be there. If he doesn't work on it, it won't. But I think that's one of those things you need to be on the court, because in the NBA, it may surprise people, they don't get a lot of practices. Frank Vogel talks about that, about how the practice time is so limited. So, you know, when you're on the court, it's big. I think that's one of the things you learn. You learn the game speed. I mean, that's why I think the D-League would be beneficial for him. Now, I don't think the Magic want to send him there, because I think he's kind of sending a European international player to the D-League. You know, that they would, why am I here in the NBA? It's sensitive. So, but that's one of those things he can work on. He had a wraparound pass that he tried to throw the surge, and Ryan Anderson just put his arm out and hit it. I think that's one of those things where he's just trying to be creative, but he doesn't know where the line is yet. Because he had a beautiful pass to Biombo off of pick and roll that Biombo, I thought he was going to dunk it, but he missed the bunny. There was some good and bad from him.
Yeah. And that's going to be the overall theme, I think, for a lot of these games, because at this point, 14 games below 500. It's not a hole that's going to be crawled out of. Yeah. And the Aaron Gordon injury really is the black cloud to me. But, you know, if it means more minutes for Hezonja, now we just start watching Hezonja. So that's kind of where I stand on the Magic. I'm going to be watching Mario closer if he gets more minutes. And hopefully he continues to show some of these positive signs. The mistakes, they're going to be there until he irons them out. Like you said, you know, you can't do it without playing. And sometimes you can't learn without making the mistake first, often, rather.
Yeah.
And certainly Mario, when he came over here, was a bit taken back by how athletic and how strong the guys were. It caught him by surprise, he admitted. And he really hasn't adapted to the speed of the NBA game. He still, like you say, he gets caught off guard a lot, is the best way of saying it. Yeah. And I don't need these texts. Please don't continue to text me in the middle of the show. There was no need for that. Anyway, you know, people get lonely or whatever. So, the Magic are more exciting than my texts, actually. So we'll continue with that. And James Harden, there's no answer for James Harden. The Magic didn't really have one.
No, he shot 6 of 21, which is not great, but he went to the line 14 times. Yeah, he set all his teammates up, 13 assists.
Not that much attention. It sets everything up, and he can have those 6 of 21 shooting nights and still blow a team out. That's pretty illustrative of just how much he impacts the game. And his bad nights are so still heavily impactful, you know what I mean? Like, a bad night from James Harden, which is last night basically, is still dominant against a team like the Magic in so many ways. 14 free throws, it's like he gets that Euro step and that shoulder swing, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, but foul.
He's an amazing player.
As I had him on my on the draft app last night. I ended up winning it last night. I had Harden. I had Vucevic,
yeah,
who went off for me.
Yeah. I sold an autograph of him for $74 on eBay.
Who?
Harden.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I only paid $30 for it. I got it right when he got traded to Houston several years ago. So, like, it'll probably be worth even more down the road, but I don't care because, you know, needed that bread.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Speaking of this, so, look, we're going to take a – Magic fans, we're going to take a turn real quick. I mean, this is still pertaining to the Magic.
Are we hopping on the segue?
So, when I think about OKC and what they could have been, do you see a similarity between the current OKC team – and the Shaq and Penny Magic team back in the day? Because OKC should have won a title.
Yeah.
If they would have stayed together, they would have won multiple titles. And it's the same thing with the Magic.
It happens a lot to a lot of these teams. I mean, we're going to be saying that about Minnesota in 5 years from now.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, yeah, because it's really hard to keep two premier players together, whether it's Shaq and Kobe, whether it's Shaq and Penny, whether it's Shaq and LeBron James. I mean, you're noticing a common thread here. Shaquille O'Neal may have been the problem because he was the problem twice in a row, and both times it was supposedly the other guy. Why did Shaq not get the blame for these feuds, you know? And he didn't. We always blame Kobe for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what's insane about OKC is the Magic, we had Shaq and Penny. OKC, they had three probably Hall of Famers, Westbrook, Harden, and Durant, and that's insane to me.
To not get a title out of that in any way, shape, or form really is.
Yeah, that's insane.
Because that is three Hall of Famers on the same roster. Wow, yeah. Even the Magic only really had two.
It's just thinking about that, and then you brought up talking about Harden when he got traded. It made me think about that, and I would go as far as to say that OKC is the new 96, 95 Magic.
Yeah, they're the second great what if of our lifetime.
Yeah, they got a 30 for 30 coming a couple of 10 years.
Yeah, and Sam Presti will be like the
Pat Williams.
The Pat Williams of it. Hopefully he ages better than Pat Williams. Pat Williams has had a rough time in that 30 for 30. Pat Williams, he's no longer looking like Pat Williams that we remember.
I know. And Pat Williams is such a good guy.
Bless him. He's a great guy, but age really caught that man bad in the last few years.
Yeah.
It happens. I mean, DeVos is in a wheelchair, but DeVos is still chugging along and looking pretty healthy in a wheelchair. I mean, if it's possible, I say it is. He's a cool guy too. But the Magic have been blessed to have DeVos ownership because he's really let the GM spend money, you know? And he's built a good arena and tried to put a good product on the court, and it just hasn't happened, this rebuild. And you know, to have not every rebuild works. That's what Phil and I concluded on the Magic, the Orlando Magic Daily broadcast, is that, you know, sometimes these rebuilds just don't work.
Yeah. Now, the Magic own the sixth worst record in the NBA after last night's loss.
Sixth worst.
And we are two games, I guess you would say, behind the Lakers, who have the third worst. And the Suns were three. So, I mean, we're right in contention to be down there. I mean, I don't know when Orlando's going to – the organization is going to fire sale. I mean, obviously, they'd have to do it before the trade deadline. Or if they're going to – I mean, I'm starting to get the feeling that they may just not do it. I heard that they were trying to hold on to Serge for a first-round pick or a really good young player. And I just – I don't know if they're going to get that.
A protected first round, maybe.
Maybe. I wonder who has that, you know?
I don't know. A lottery protected first would probably not be too much to ask.
Where would some destinations for Serge, would you think? That we could get a protected first round.
Houston.
Houston would be clutch. What about the Clippers?
Clippers.
I think Toronto would give it up.
Toronto. Boston has high picks, but Boston. Any of these teams that are fringe.
What now? Now, out of those teams, what teams do you feel are the most desperate that they feel like their window's closing? I think it's the Clippers.
Yeah, I could see that. The Clippers could find a way to make it work, too, to where he would fit as a third forward in that rotation off the bench behind Griffin and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
And that would relegate Maurice Spates to Gatorade Boy.
I mean, if Ibaka, I don't know how willing he is to play the five. And I've seen on basketballreference.com that in some of his years in OKC, he spent a good deal of minutes playing the center position, and he had success. I don't think he wants to be a center, but if he would go there and be the backup center, and him and Maurice Spates kind of were that backup front court out there, I think that could be successful for them.
Yeah, so maybe the Clippers would do that. That's the kind of thing I think it would take to get maximum value is one of these teams that could actually plug Ibaka in, improve without giving a lot up to Orlando, to where Orlando still gets something out of this. And then you're looking now at a situation where Oladipo, Sabonis, and a strangely effective Ilyasova have all been traded for a mid-first-round pick.
Yeah. Definitely not going to win on that one. Now it's just about trying to get what we can out of it. Squeeze the best we can out of the rest of Ibaka. We're a desperate team. Orlando's very desperate right now, and the only thing is to find someone else who may be just a little less desperate and needs to give something up. And I really think the pressure's on the Clippers.
I can see Portland making us run for Ibaka.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be. I mean, the front court, we talked about it a little bit. Front court's a little jammed, but I think Ibaka would definitely be the best front court player they'd get.
They need a four really bad in Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, Aminu's a good power forward in a small ball situation, but they don't have a big power forward when they need to go big. Ed Davis is okay, but he's that's all he is okay.
And I believe Portland has Cleveland's first round pick this year. Don't quote me on that. Let me see. Yeah, Portland has the Cavaliers' first round pick.
Okay, so you deal that and something like Myers Leonard for Ibaka.
That would be nice. Now, also, what's interesting, I'm seeing that Toronto holds the Clippers' first round lottery protected. That's interesting with Toronto. I don't think Toronto could be getting a little more desperate. They've been slipping a little bit, but that Portland with Cleveland's first round pick, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're gonna get a late first rounder, and then we're also gonna have our early pick, and then we'll have our early second round pick. I mean, I think Rob Hennigan, the one thing he has been good about is he's a great talent evaluator. I love it when he drafts. Yeah. I mean, he's from Andrew Nicholson to where he got him to Kylo Quinn to. I mean, he did his best with Victor in that draft. That draft was horrendous. He went and got Aaron. I thought he reached a little bit, but I'm happy with it. He went and got Alfred. I mean, those are the most questionable moves. But when he flipped Aaron Aflalo for Evan Fournier, I mean, were you like me? And I was just like, what? But he won that. I think he did.
Andre Herring on the three-guard rotation, he was always really high on Fournier. And I hadn't seen Fournier play yet, but he saw that Denver part of his rookie year where he was playing really well. And I didn't know anything about him, really. I hadn't seen him at all. But he said, no, you got a good deal here. So he knew. But I didn't know. I didn't know at the time.
I mean, I saw that year that we had a Flavo. I remember we went to Denver, and Fournier put up like 31 points against us. And I thought it was just like, I was just like, okay, Magic's really bad. This guy's over here putting up like 31 or something against us. It was just, and his offensive game that night was pretty good, and I was impressed with him. But I was like, who is this guy? And then when we traded for him, I thought we got the bad end of the stick a little bit, but no, we didn't. So for Rob Hennigan, I do like him as a talent evaluator. Him being the one deciding the head coach, that's been a fail. And then now with the pressure on him, I think it's starting to, his deals have not been as clearly organized as in the past. You know, pressure does something to people.
Yeah, I would agree with all that, really. He's drafted extremely well. He's made some good trades. He plucked Tobias Harris for nothing, if you remember, too. From J.J. Redick. And the Tobias Harris eventually turned into nothing, too, because they traded him for two players they didn't keep.
But he
was got for nothing as well. So that has to be remembered, that ultimately they got him for an expiring J.J. Redick contract. And that's how they got Ilyasova, too, wasn't it?
Yep.
No, that was a different trade. That was with Detroit. I'm sorry. But Ilyasova was on the team at the time, oddly enough. He was on that Milwaukee team.
He was.
And he was what made Bogut expendable, if you remember. He played really well, and then the Milwaukee got rid of Bogut. Ilyasova's really played a strange role in altering these franchises' fates, even with like Philadelphia like now using him so much in the rebuild. He's having a great year, Ilyasova is.
Yes.
And he didn't know Orlando. See, there's a cultural problem when you have these guys that are going off one season later and having great years. Deadman, Ilyasova, Harkless, they all were ineffective in Orlando, and they're all playing great this year. That's an organization problem, because you saw the same thing in New Orleans. Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson struggled there, and now they're playing great in Houston. So when you're seeing these players revitalize their career by just switching teams, it's an organization problem, not a player problem.
I agree with that. I think, and also, I mean, he evaluated Deadman at the D League, and he called him up. He made the roster, and you know, I think he's been a good evaluator. And when to touch on what you say about organization problem with a culture, I think that has to do also with just having an identity. Because when you go to San Antonio, you got Tony Parker, Ginobili, who really aren't the same type of impactful players, but they know what they do. Kawhi Leonard's there. You know, you could say, okay, these players all know who they are. Now, it's easier for you to identify with your role. Same thing with Harkless. You know, you got Damian and CJ out there. You got some other players who have been in the league a little longer. So it's easier for you to say, okay, I know what these players are going to do. Now, I need to fit into that. But when you're on a team where everyone's kind of trying to figure out where they're at, I think everyone's bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. Everyone's trying to do a little too much. And Orlando doesn't have a guy. I mean, Vucevic wants to be that guy, but he's not. Everyone's bumping into each other trying to be the man, and there's not a solid one. You know, we want Aaron Gordon to be the man, but he gets really passive sometimes. It's interesting how it works.
I think that's fair. Harkless became very disinterested in Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of this, you could just see it all over his face. He just did not give a darn to be on the court or in practice or in the locker room. And so they did him a favor and got rid of him. They got nothing really for him, a protected second-round pick for a guy that was a lottery late. Well, he was late first-round, almost a lottery pick. He was 17th, I think, Harkless, from Philadelphia that year. And he's he's an effective small forward, but in Orlando he wasn't, and he never had a chance to be one.
I mean, Hennigan, as far as assembling talent, has been good and evaluating it. Now, putting it together, all the pieces are just kind of okay. He's like, I got you the pieces now. You know, I think his ability to now put it all together can come into question because it hasn't really come all together. There's a lot of good pieces, and you're like, those pieces are really good, but we don't see the picture, you know?
Right.
And then his coaching hiring has not been great either. And I think the moment that he started to feel the pressure was the moment they hired Scott Skiles. Mm-hmm. I think the moment they hired Scott Skiles, the pressure came on, and the moment the national public realized Orlando felt the pressure was when we made the Tobias Harris trade.
Yeah. Well, we're going to close on that note, as uplifting as it is, you know. The misery continues in Orlando, 14 games below 500, completely out of the playoff picture, sixth worst team in the NBA, one of the worst products to watch on a nightly basis, coming from someone that is watching them, trying desperately to remain interested, as Aaron Gordon now sustains a injury, putting his future into the immediate future anyway, into the air. And tank.
Yeah.